Brian Price joins us on Sports Byline, going into his second season as the manager of the Cincinnati Reds, and the Reds coming off a 76-86 record last season. He went to Tam High in Mill Valley, California, also UC Berkeley, where he pitched for Cal, and he was in the Angels and the Mariner organizations. And I'm just wondering, when you took over that job, what did you expect being a manager to be like, and how was it similar or different from what you found, Brian?
Well, you know, it was, you know, for me, the challenge I knew was inheriting the other half of the players. You know, I had a very close and strong relationship with the pitching staff. I'd been the pitching coach there in Cincinnati for the previous 4 years. But I think gaining the respect of the position players that needed to know that I had an understanding of what it's like to be a position player, to be an everyday player or a bench player, and respecting the challenges that they have and not be overreactionary, you know, when they weren't able to come through or perform at the level I had hoped. I understand the game is very difficult to play. It was hard for me. And they needed to know that as much as I demanded from them, I had a respect for guys that put in effort and showed up to play every day. And hopefully that was something that we got across over the course of the year.
You were a longtime assistant coach in the major leagues, also was a coach down in the minor leagues as well. Didn't have any managing experience. And a lot of people make a lot out of that sort of thing. Is that justified in any way?
Well, I think it can be. I think that it's very easy to carve out your little niche in the game and become very good at it. In my case, it was in the pitching portion of the game. I was a pitching coach for the previous 25 years between the minor leagues and the major leagues, and felt like I had a pretty good grasp on what I was doing and what I wanted to accomplish with our pitchers. That being said, I do think that there's a certain benefit to, you know, being able to take on something without any preconceived ideas on how the job is supposed to be done, to be able to bring whatever my natural gifts are as a coach and bring that to the other side of the game. You know, I think the other part is, of course, is that you have to have some, you know, baseball intellect in order to be able to make things work and be able to maintain the respect of the players. And I don't think that was ever in question over the course of the past season, and hopefully won't be moving forward.
One of the things I've always found, no matter what the sport might be, is that when somebody takes over the top job, who they interacted with on the way up, meaning the coaches or the managers on the way up, was significant in helping them develop as a manager or as a coach when they got that opportunity. In your case, it was Bob Melvin, and this was up in Seattle first and then down in Arizona the second time. Tell me a little bit about how your relationship developed and what you got out of it that, you know, has helped you along the way.
Well, I think one of the most interesting things, or a couple of the most interesting parts of my relationship with Bob Melvin, is the fact that he and I both went to Cal. We were a year apart. We never played together. We never knew each other. We're both from the Bay Area. We both went to a lot of Golden State Warrior games as kids. And we never, ever crossed paths until he was hired to manage the Mariners. And I also interviewed for that position, and he got it. This was back at the end of the 2002 season after Lou Piniella left Seattle. And I think Bob had some concerns that I might be the disgruntled guy that didn't get the job, and nothing could have been further from the truth. I couldn't have been more excited. I didn't consider myself ready to manage at that time. I was happy because Bob came with, you know, really a strong pedigree and a lot of people that were in his corner. The perfect guy for the Mariner job, and we hit it off instantaneously. Kind of made me his right hand man, and ability to talk about Bay Area stuff from when we were kids and our Cal experience and things of that nature kind of helped us bond. And he always reminded me, because he was kind of more of a second catcher for 10 years in the big leagues. He was kind of the backup guy most of the time, that the game is really hard to play. And if you don't respect the game and respect how hard it is to play and respect the guys that are putting in the time and the work to be great, when they struggle, you still have to be there with them. And that was probably the most valuable lesson he taught me.
You made a very interesting comment right there, not ready to manage. When is somebody or anybody ready to manage? What is the measuring stick for that, do you think?
Well, I think it's really, in some ways, there's a certain amount of savvy in having and being able to interact with the players, and also to be able to manage or coach upwards towards – your front office and your ownership. And to me, there's a certain amount of experience that I needed. I wasn't an ex-former major league player. I didn't have a great deal of interaction with major league owners and major league general managers. It took me a while to get established at the major league level and cultivate relationships and earn the respect of my peers. And I think without that, it would have been a lot easier for the players to challenge, you know, my background and my understanding of the game at the major league level, my readiness to take on the job. So, it was 11 years later that I was given the opportunity to manage the Reds. And in those 11 years, I think I cultivated, you know, a lot of the qualities, or at least unique qualities, that are a necessity in order to manage effectively at the big league level.
What was the due diligence you did on the Reds to say, hey, I'd like to manage here?
Well, you know, it really came down to the Reds approaching me. You know, I've never been really one to raise my hand and say, you know, ooh, look at me. You know, I want to be the next manager. What I really wanted to do was create an environment where I became a candidate, because people felt like it was something without my prompting that they felt I would succeed at, and would want me to be the person in position to lead the organization on the field. And that happened after Dusty Baker was not rehired after the 2013 season. They did approach me about interviewing for the position. And I felt at that point in time I was ready, as disappointed as I was to see Dusty leave, because he did a wonderful job with the Reds. I did feel like it was a good situation because of my pre-existing relationship with Walt Jocketty, our GM, and our owner, Bob Castellini, as well as my familiarity with the team. So that had a lot to do with it. You know, it was like, hey, you know, I think I can step in that. The guys know me. I think they respect the job that I did with the pitchers. And I think that they would trust that I would have, you know, what it takes to lead them to the next level.
Since you were a pitching coach for such a long time, once you become manager, is it hard to give up maybe second guessing or analysis about the way you would do something or look at something to another coach who is your pitching coach?
Yeah, yes, that is. I found that to be true. I anticipated that to be true because the pitching job was very personal to me, and personal in many ways, because I think there's a right way and a wrong way to do the job, and there's certainly not one way to do it, but I had my one way of doing it, and it served me well. That being said, there's a lot of great pitching coaches out there, and I think we have one of them in Jeff Pico. And he and I are different. We're different personalities, and we prioritize different things. That being said, we got on the same page very early in our relationship in appreciating what we really felt were the priorities for our staff. We were coming off a couple of really good, effective years back-to-back in pitching. And I really didn't want to mess with that. The ingredients are a great deal. I wanted him to bring the personality to the job, but not to fundamentally change the way we did things. So I got the right guy, and we're on the right page, but there's no question. I mean, I sit there a lot going, you know, what would I do right here? You know, and I talked to Jeff about it, but in the end, Jeff had to make the final call.
You know, it's interesting, Brian, because I'm looking at some of the pitchers that you worked with, Cueto, Chapman, also Homer Bailey, and then you coached a young Felix Hernandez, a veteran like Jamie Moyer in Seattle, Cy Young Award winner Brandon Webb, and also future Hall of Famer Randy Johnson in Arizona. Each of those have different talents, different personalities. How does a pitching coach and even a manager today balance working with them? What is the key to it? What do you have to do? Is it communication or what is it?
Well, let me first acknowledge the fact that you really did your homework there, Ron, because you covered a lot of the great ones that I've had the good fortune of working with. And I think the one theme that has to hold true in every relationship, and you hit on communication, but I think as well as communication, it's creating an understanding that each player, each pitcher, understands that I am working in their best interest, not mine. In the best interest of the individual, the best interest of the team, not the best interest of Brian Price to somehow, you know, it would be really easy to kind of affix myself to Brandon Webb and Randy Johnson and Jamie Moyer and Felix Hernandez and somehow, some way, glean some sense of responsibility for their great successes. And I think that's the worst thing you can do as a coach, is to try to somehow connect yourself to the successes of your pitchers or your players as if, you know, I'm the reason or a unique reason on why they're successful. I was given some tremendous talent to work with. And so I want to acknowledge that fact. And I want them to know it, that, hey, you know, I'm fortunate to have this opportunity to work with you. I'm going to push you, but what you get, you're going to get on your own. You're going to get what you deserve. And it's going to be because you went out and got it, not because, you know, I went out and did it for you.
Today, managing pitchers, does that mean, you know, holding down the number of innings that they pitch? Because it seems like a lot of them are getting injured. And you've got a starting pitcher in Homer Bailey who's recovering from a torn tendon in his forearm. What's his status for opening day?
I think there's a good chance that Homer will be ready. He's very close. He's about 10 to 14 days ahead of schedule on his rehab, which will get him throwing a couple of weeks prior to when we anticipated. Coming off the injury, certainly, you know, we're not going to push anybody to be ready before their time, but there's a chance he could be ready by opening day. We'll just have to wait and see where he is by the time he gets to spring training. We certainly won't rush him, but, you know, making those decisions as far as innings, numbers of innings pitched and pitches thrown over the course of the season, you know, I'm kind of a believer in, you know, the information and the studies that we have here currently about numbers of innings increased from one season to the next. I think that's important information. But the other part of that is kind of the way that I was coached and others were coached at the major league level in years before, and that's really passing the smell test. And that's not asking a pitcher to do more than he needs to do, but it's also not putting such binders on that a pitcher that's throwing a great game needs to come out because he's thrown 90 pitches after seven innings, and you don't want to lose the game with somebody than one of your bullpen pitchers, because that's really covering your butt most of the time. You know, if you got a starting pitcher that's cruising and doing a great job and his pitch count suggests that he can stay in the game, I'm not the type of guy that fears losing a game late with a starter. I just think if they get paid a lot of money, they're supposed to be five of your best pitchers, and they should be out there, you know, when they're healthy and feeling good and throwing well, they should be in the game.
We only have about 2 minutes left to go, but four of your five starters from last year were set to be free agents after 2015. They traded at the winter meetings. Two of your pitchers, Joey Votto has to stay healthy. I think that's important as well to you. And you need to get more production. So have I summed that up pretty good for 2015?
Yeah. Well, you know, we had some challenges in 2014 with injuries, and that being said, there were some games out there that were winnable games that we didn't win. So the other part of that is finding a way to will ourselves to win games that we have a chance to win. You know, we didn't lose a lot of games 7-1. You know, we lost a lot of games 3-2 and 4-3, and that has to change with execution. It has to change with mindset. So as much as being healthy and getting productivity is important, we have to be able to get to the point where we're executing at a much higher level than we did last year. And then we can win when we have some injuries.
Has it been fun for you?
It's been great. It exceeded my expectations tenfold.
How long do you have to, can you let loose of a game before you start thinking of the next game?
Well, I wish I could say just as soon as that game was over, but it's hard to do because of that. You know, we evaluated ourselves and where we could have done a better job as coaches and managers. And then the other part, of course, is that if something happened and the media gets a hold of it and they want to run with something for a while, they'll run with it. And they kind of, it's still out there the next day. But I like to feel like when I come to work the next day that, you know, my 100% attention is focused on that day's game.
Well, Brian, I can tell you one thing. In Cincinnati, that may be the low point, but just think about what it would be like if you were in New York or Chicago.
I agree, Ron, 100%, and I couldn't be happier to be with the Reds and be managing a great franchise. They've been great to me, and I hope I can deliver something for them here in 2015.
Give my best to Walt Jocketty. He's been a longtime friend. Brian, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it. It's been a very insightful interview, and if you come back to Mill Valley, that's where I live, let's try to get together.
Sounds good, Ron. Thanks so much for having me on.
Right. Brian Price with us again. Fine Cincinnati Reds manager in his second season, going into his second season, coming off a 78 and also 76 and 86 record last season. We continue with more of You and Sports Byline.